Whenever feasible, one should always try to eat the root. Would you join me at the table?
Welcome to Eat the Rootcast, a podcast about NBC's Hannibal. I'm Cooper, and with me I have...
Hi, it's Miko.
Hi, this is Ophelia.
And tonight, we are talking about episode 3 of season 1, Potage. Potage.
Potage.
We just had the pronunciation explained to us by the internet.
Potage.
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 Potage. Okay, so Potage, apparently, is the name of the episode. This is, again, directed by David Slade. And I think right off the bat, I noticed that this episode feels like episode 1. Mm-hmm. Episode 2 sort of felt like general television. But if you look at episodes 1 and 3, it has a very distinct style. The kind that you don't often see on television. Another thing that's interesting that stands out is this episode was co-written by David Fury, who used to write for Buffy and Angel.
Oh,
and wrote the best episode of Lost, I don't care what anybody says.
Which one?
Walkabout. The episode where we learn about Locke and find out he's in his wheelchair.
Oh,
that is my favorite episode. I remember being so excited when I saw that that episode was by David Fury. So it's another exciting. I always love it when I see his name come up in credits.
Talk about tonight's one.
So tonight we're going with a Cabernet Sauvignon from Yellowtail. Mm-hmm. There's a kangaroo on the bottle.
There is. It is a fine Australian fighting wine.
Mika, you noticed clothing choices.
Yes.
Very, very intensely.
Yeah.
You know, I noticed visuals like crazy. Mm-hmm. And this, to me, felt very much like episode 1 and dramatically different than episode 2. How about the clothing choices and the color palettes?
Oh, very much so. Because what I'm looking at is, I do look at the clothes very carefully. And I also look at the scenery. It's sort of, it's what I'm sort of, it's ingrained in me. I look at how things are lit. I look about the choices that are made in the room, how it's decorated, how it's laid out, the color choices, and then specifically the costumes. And what I'm loving about the series is that for television, people usually don't care.
Right.
There's no concept going on. It's, do they look like an FBI agent? Do they look like a doctor? Do they look, it's, you know, whatever they can find in the store that week, that's what gets put, or whatever, you know, they've gotten as a promo.
Right.
Someone is taking a heck of a lot of time to think about this show from the first moment on. And I don't know whether it's because we have a return of the original director from the pilot. I'm seeing more specific choices again. They were still doing it in the second episode, I think, because overall they're trying to keep a look, but it looked like they were trying to tell us something.
Yeah.
Saturated colors returned in force. The very first scene, saturated yellow leaves.
Yeah.
Oh, so that was something that really stood out in this episode. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's just that we're used to seeing television in California. Mm-hmm. That's what we're used to seeing on television, is generally California.
Yeah, which is bland.
And so seeing the fall on here, especially, when they pull up in front of the Hobbs house and just there's leaves everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's legitimate fall. That's not someone dressing California fall.
Yeah, it should be.
Hannibal is filmed in Toronto. And really, as we see throughout the series, and we'll see more and more of this, makes use of some really gorgeous scenery throughout Toronto.
What I find very interesting, and I was thinking of, is I don't know if they kind of turn up the chroma on these colors, because they just seem sort of unnaturally bright, you know, and especially when you're seeing the beginning is really fascinating because they're in the woods and
we're talking about the cold open
yeah
yeah
the cold open featuring none of our main characters
yes
Right. So we're in the cabin and the woods with Abigail and Garrett Jacob Hobbs, because you can't say his name without saying the full name.
Yes. Because they do it in the show.
They do. They never say Hobbs. Like everything else. You know, it's just last name. But it's kind of interesting that way. I think that goes back to the book. I remember there was a lot of, you know, the full... Maybe that's just, you know, the serial killer trope. Well, John Wayne Gacy.
So you've got to always... Oh, they always do the three names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it makes them sound more serial killer-ish.
So right off the bat, we're hunting with the Hobbs. Hunting with the Hobbs. It's a new show. It's going to follow Duck Hobbs. Dynasty.
Yes.
This is the most subdued performance we've seen thus far from Mads Mikkelsen.
Yes. In this episode, it seems like Hannibal is just the watcher.
And he observes everything.
Yeah. Oh, he plays some roles later on. He definitely gets his...
He gets his moment at the end, but a good, closer to the end, but a good majority of the beginning of it, all of the shots of him are just him watching very intense.
Casey Roll is the name of the actress who plays Abigail, and her performance is big in the same way that Will's performance is big. Will's performance is a collection of tics and gestures that's put together in a very realistic way. And Casey Rawl has a very similar style of performance. So it contrasts very nicely with Mads Mikkelsen's low-key.
And it's interesting because then it kind of makes both of them seem like his pets. There's this...
Well, they're definitely drawing the connection.
But you do that with her costume, where they draw them together. But what's interesting is, I guess we could talk about it as we get further into that part, is that... She's not connected to Will at first.
No, she's wearing the blues.
She's wearing the same exact shape and color as Hannibal. They're all in shades of sapphire blue.
Yes.
With touches of red.
Bloom as well.
Yes, everyone. Yeah. Alana, Hannibal, Jack, except for Will.
Was he not?
No. Oh, Will is always in his washed out jeans.
Will looks like his dogs. Will is part of that pack.
He's always in some washed out color. You know, like his jackets are always sort of a washed out brown. His jeans are never even strongly colored. Everything is very washed out. They take so much time in details.
Yeah.
I wound up while he was doing a scene suddenly noticing that his shirt was wonderfully worn. He had
like new clothes.
Yeah.
They look like they came out of a closet.
Yes.
They look like they came out of a dresser.
He's washed this shirt over and over and over again, and he doesn't care. It's comfortable, it's practical, and he has no one to impress. And it's nice that they had that detail, that someone took the time to make a shirt that looked like you washed it 5,000 times, and it's frayed at the collar, and there's little holes around, you know, the shoulder and everything. The detail in this show is wonderful.
They're paying attention.
Show. They are.
And let's go right to Will's house then.
There's a point I'd like to make.
We have to talk about that first scene.
Okay.
They set up the entire episode with the line, eating her is honoring her.
Otherwise, it's just murder.
Because during that entire process of him teaching her to hunt, and as we were observing, she's not into it.
It makes you wonder if this is... See, if, at this point, I, as a viewer, see Abigail as an accomplice. Because of the moment where she's running her fingers through the deer's hair.
That's the part I wanted Tim Burns.
And then has her hand in the girl's hair.
The girl's hair.
And wakes up screaming. And just the way she plays with Hannibal over the course of the episode.
Oh, yes.
Like, she's identified something's off. She likely recognizes that her father had that similar otherworld offness and is playing that. She doesn't know what she's doing. She has no idea what she's doing with Hannibal.
But she's doing something. Twice.
Yeah.
She figures things out too, in a way that other people can't. Yeah, she puts all of that stuff together, and she's observing. But she's also really having a struggle, because she's trying to figure it out. Is this... Because we still don't know. They tease us. and then they give us something else. Mm-hmm. And they tease us. This entire show, I got three quarters of the way through, and I was trying to think, how are we going to keep this tease going for three seasons?
I'm still not sure if when she was crying, if she was manipulating or being honestly shaken by the events.
There's a lot of things. When the neighbor girl shows up and looks exactly like her, I'm like, okay, I have no, what? There's more, she's best friends with the girl. Is it the girl then? Is it not the dog?
Well, what's really artful about it is because they know that, okay, so Jack feels that she is an accomplice.
Right.
We as an audience at that point, before this episode, felt the way Will did, because we're naturally inclined to go in Will's direction. Then the episode throws all these curves at us, but then acknowledges the curves and throws another one. So it's like the show is aware of where we are going to go and takes us there only to throw us back out. And that's what I really think is so interesting and artful about it, is they're taking these stock tropes and giving them to us in the expected way, but then in an unexpected way.
It's interesting that they know where we're going to go, and they don't want us to go there. Again, this television usually wants to give us what they think we want. And this show is giving us what they want us to think we want. And then they change it once we get comfortable, which is great.
Okay, so we're at Will's house. We see the dog pack, which I love every time it happens. And Alana shows up and again gives this really touching, intimate, yet aloof performance. Carolyn DeHaverna is playing this so well. Her back and forth with him, the let's have that cup of coffee.
Right.
And just the way she's playing Jack, the way they're interacting there, it's really lovely. And I was very, very happy with that.
I also like the way he was embarrassed about his clothing and needing to put a...
Yeah, I think I'll put a robe on, yeah.
I'll put a robe on anyway, which insinuates that he wants to be proper in front of her. That there's definitely
or he's interest. Trying to behave. The way...
I suppose. Yeah. I feel like it's more of a preening... A hint at, like, a preening practice that he doesn't want to be seen disheveled.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also... It's like being caught in a private, vulnerable moment.
Yeah.
Yes, that too.
Yeah, and he does...
Because hybrids are great for stalking.
For stalking, exactly. Because he wasn't expecting her to be out there.
Right.
And I think it was more of a... you have caught me in a very vulnerable moment with my family, with this pack.
Yeah.
And by going inside and putting on a robe and covering himself, he can gain control over the situation. And especially with someone who has a hard time with social interaction, certain conventions bring the power back to them when they feel like they're losing control and they're very uncomfortable with how they're interacting with the other person. So that may have been I'm going to reassert control on my life here. I'm uncomfortable that I'm out here in, my
boxers.
Underwear and
yeah.
T-shirt.
What did you make of the dogs keep a promise a person can't
line? Yeah, dogs don't have motives that they keep secret from you. They don't have an ego.
There was a great setup to that line, too. She says that, well, there's something more I want to say, but it would be borderline rude.
Mm.
And he said... Well, she said that she's trying to think of a different way of saying it.
She wanted to think of a more
polite way. And Will
said,
no.
Just be rude.
Just say it. And what she says is, dogs keep a promise that people can't. And that was, I thought that was interesting the way they kind of set that delivery up with the, her not wanting to come off as rude to Will. And also, I think it was before that statement, when the phone was ringing and her cell phone was ringing.
All the phones are ringing
because Jack's trying to get them.
It had a real smoking in the boys' room feel to it, hiding from the principal. Jack, as principal, is multiple times in this episode.
Yes.
They go to the principal's office at least once in the episode.
Oh, in this episode, they get a...
Yeah.
Talking to.
A dress down.
A dress down, most definitely.
Well, there was a point where Will or Alana, I'm not sure which one, points out that she rattles Jack. But I thought that was interesting because it's sort of in a way the way that Hannibal so far observes and just sees what people are going to do. It's like Will is a little bit wanting to see how far Alana can rattle Jack.
So at this point, Alana's purpose of being at the house is that Abigail has woken up. And she wakes up in that interim dream sequence between our flashback.
And then Alana is at the hospital with her. And this was, there are a number of scenes here that feel almost right out of Buffy writing, which is why I really recognize David Fury. The "I don't do well redeeming gift cards" feels like Buffy. The multiple takes to the principal's office. "We may as well call Jack Crawford Giles." So, I mean, there are a number of things here that have his fingerprints on it. And it's the quirkier, stranger stuff that really layers in these character details. So like Alana rattling Will and the "I don't do well with gift cards." And just there's a number of just little character beats in here that I think the first and second episode sort of didn't have time for that now we can get to.
They've simplified this episode to give time for that. Second episode had a lot of people, had a lot of stuff going on. They went to different locations. They focused more on
Killer of the Week.
The Killer of the Week.
Which thankfully we don't have here.
We don't have here, no. So we have time to do a little character development. And we only have our main characters and we spend time doing that. So that we can have
do they develop?
Moments like the moments between Alana and Abigail. It's so interesting. It's a dance. Mm-hmm. And it's like that with a lot of the interactions between people.
And Alana immediately sees that Abigail is playing a push-pull game with her.
Oh, yeah.
And
very apparent.
It's interesting that she sees that but is willing to play along sort of to trap. Everybody's setting these traps for each other on this show. And that's really what Alana's doing. That from the moment she realizes that Abigail was withholding information from the nurses, she knows here's someone who's already thought that many steps ahead. And when you're thinking that many steps ahead, there's something off.
Well, and she says, too, she wants to sell the house so that she can go to college. That's a very practical thought to come out.
Which could be a result of shock.
True. Or sitting in a room by yourself for a really long time.
That's true.
That is true.
They don't really give you an idea of how long she's been awake.
Right.
And Alana gets it. You don't have, like, a number of days. You know it's before been some time because she had this whole thing of you haven't told the nurses this. You know, it may be a day, it may be right. 2 days, it's really hard to tell, but it seems like she's had time to think and do nothing but think. And Alana is going in with some, what I love on her, a lot of her reverses, is that she is watching.
Very observant.
Very observant, very intense. It's just, it's there. You don't need any words.
Well, there's so much said through observation in this episode. You know, to really, the whole purpose of the Alana versus Hannibal versus Crawford scene is you're all in trouble, so let's yell at you guys. And by the way, Hannibal is Will's psychiatrist. Alana, you back off. But that's really it. That's the scene. Hannibal walking into Will's classroom. As he's talking about the intelligent psychopath, the first time I saw this, I totally saw the little smile at the end of the moment. Yes. But that smile is building from the moment Hannibal walks in and sees his work on the screen. And it's just the most subtle performance I have ever seen on television.
I have that written down in my notes. I just want to claim that we took notes separately.
I bet we all have that moment written down.
Again, it's another one of those dances. He's laying it out there.
Yeah.
He knows exactly how this is done. And the person who is doing it is right there. And again, it's only hinting, it's teasing, because he's looking at Hannibal. He does his little pace.
It's that eye contact.
Yeah.
And then he
comes just a notice. I noticed Hannibal. But it's that connection.
And Will never looks at anybody.
Right.
Yet he paces and he looks.
at Hannibal.
At Hannibal,
where he had previously stated he doesn't like
this is an intelligent psychopath, a sadist. He may never kill this way again, which is word for word from Red Dragon. That's another one of those callbacks. Yes.
There are 3 points where they focus on Lecter's mouth, and the slight smile gets a little bit bigger. So one was where Will makes a statement that he is better than that. That the copycat is better than Hobbs. And then...
And Hannibal is basically... Yeah, he is, absolutely.
And then it elevates a little bit more when he says that he has elevated it to art. And then again when he says that it is the copycat who called and warned Hobbs. Those three
because Will
moments,
knows these major
you get
things.
The corners of his mouth just by like a fraction
of a millimeter,
you get this impression that he's very pleased with this pet he's been cultivating and how intrigued he is by the way Will's mind works.
Because that was the whole point of the copycat, was Hannibal said, I think I can show Goodwill his face. By showing him this absurd, abstract, almost, he was able to directly point him in the right direction. And so that's Hannibal serving the greater good. I mean, he tore this poor girl's lungs out at the same time.
The greater good.
Wow, Cassie Karen. Boyle.
Ends justify the mean.
So who else is sick of Freddy already?
You know what's funny that you just say that? Because my notes, it says, Freddy fucks things up again.
She does. She has some interesting lines in this scene.
Oh, she does.
The big one that stood out to me is she wants to tell your truth. So she tells Abigail, I want to tell your truth. This scene also has Abigail ask, does that mean I'm sick too? Which on one hand can mean, is it hereditary? But on another can mean, if I helped him, does that mean I'm sick?
Right.
You know, she's analyzing her position. Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like,
but
you
we
know,
don't
know. Yeah. And I thought it was so very interesting to take that walk with her. And go into
in the solarium there?
Into the solarium. Yeah. I was like, this is a damn
that was
nice,
beautiful, wasn't it?
Facility.
I know.
It's like,
right?
But it was go crazy.
It was
I
a nice
go
facility.
I want to go crazy.
But
so
it was
I can
a nice facility in that at one point it was new and beautiful, but now there are no plants in the solarium. Now it's sort of, we can't afford the staff to upkeep, you know?
Right. It's not very well taken care of, but they have the wrought iron bench and... Even her room is kind of old-fashioned and not quite, but it is. It's a very interesting choice. She's not in a hospital. You know, normally when people would do something like this, let's just do psychiatric hospital.
Right. It's not the kind that's on the bottom basement floor.
Right. Right. It's not tile
hospital.
And cement block walls and nurses in uniforms. It's this sort of beautiful. Old-fashioned sanitarium.
Like a rehab for really rich people.
Wealthy Torontoites.
Yeah. And so it's interesting to have, after Alana going there and talking to her, to have Will come back with Hannibal. And I'm still trying to figure out how the hell Freddy gets everywhere.
Well, yeah. Who at the hospital authorized redhead... I mean, she could have said, I'm so-and-so. But really, at this point, there's still got to be some restrictions on who gets to see Abigail Hobbs.
Oh, yeah. There should have... Okay, in reality, there would be a cop stationed in her room or just outside her door because she's a suspect. It's clear that Jack suspects her. And that it's clear that she has information they want. So even if she wasn't... a suspect for murder, she is a possible accomplice.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. She is somebody who has information about where bodies might be. They would not let her be alone. She would be under surveillance.
I also found it interesting. I wondered at what point is it then obstructing justice, what she's doing?
Oh, she's been obstructing justice since the first time.
You know, if Jack were there, he'd be yelling at her.
But at what point do we go from yelling... to having things like
Well, yeah. They did cuff her in the last episode and yell at her a little bit.
You know, no, that's well, there's true. A lot of this. There's a lot of shaking of the finger and slaps on the wrist. Bed. And when do we take this to the next level? We're dealing with trying to stop future killings.
Mm-hmm.
She has tampered with evidence at a location. She has tampered with witnesses and quite possibly another criminal. At one point, do we stop propping up this window of disbelief with a heck of a lot of boards and go, well, when does the law take over? I understand that you want to keep doing this because it is network television, and we have to have an irritating antagonist. It's just the way things are done now. It has to be somebody who is so abhorrent that they drive you crazy.
That you want Hannibal to take care of her.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. And they're all
really, and that, I think that's what the show is doing. They're giving us they're gift wrapping a villain for Hannibal.
Yes.
That this the audience the will be like, yeah, people. When is that redhead going
to
die?
Because I'm there. Episode 3, I'm ready for her to die.
Well, I'll tell you, she makes it to episode 4. Person. I'll just tell you that.
A goal.
She survives at least one more episode.
I was hoping she wasn't going to be here for all the seasons. Or it was going to be really hard. I actually thought that at one point. I was like, this is the turning point for me in an episode. Of whether or not I go for further seasons.
Yeah.
If I'm trying to enjoy the beauty of this feast, but she keeps irritating me, we're going to have a problem.
Well, you know, killing someone, even if you have to, is the ugliest thing in the world.
Yes.
Oh, I had a point about that. The question that Abigail poses to Will was actually a question that his son poses to him in the Red Dragon.
Yes, that's where that came from.
And I thought that that was an interesting choice on the writer's part.
Because they're setting up Will and Abigail's parental relationship.
Yes. Reading my notes over there.
Yes.
Like, literally, that's what I have right down. Closer to a daughter figure. Thank you.
They are definitely setting that. When they show up at the house, they look almost they look exactly alike.
And then this scene ends with not very smart to piss off a guy who thinks about killing people for a living. And then the next scene
said to Freddie Lau
begins with not very smart to piss off a guy who thinks about killing people for a living with Will, Alana, Hannibal, all in the principal's office in front of Jack. And the best part is when he looks at Will, at Hannibal and Alana and says, how did you let those words come out of his mouth?
And it's
like, are we babysitters?
Right. Like, how would you prevent that? I mean,
takes Hannibal to task there. Like, how did you?
And Hannibal just, he gives this little look where it's just like, yeah, I should.
Well, he says, I trust Will to speak for himself.
For himself, yeah.
Honestly, I think he gave more of a smirk than a...
Well, how do you stop that from coming out of somebody's mouth? Once it starts
you can!
Out. If anything, I think Hannibal was quite amused by Will saying it to Freddy.
Yes.
But...
And I think Hannibal gets quite amused by Jack being grumpy anyway.
Oh, yes.
So then there's more Freddy.
He is the antagonist.
Yeah. And Nicholas Boyle.
Oh, yes.
Which is Cassie Boyle's brother. And it's... obnoxious.
Oh,
so let's just skip past that because
irritating, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I don't understand why instigating that was so important to her.
Because she wants to make it so much worse for Will because he didn't go for her I can make it better for you bullshit.
Yeah.
I can make
just
it a whole
irritating.
I can make it a whole
which,
lot worse.
Which
yeah.
clearly
yeah.
in the book and on the show is Freddie Lowndes' point. To be irritating.
They clash heads.
So we'll go on with it. What I really liked is when they all go to Abigail's house. They bring Abigail to the house.
A lot of things
after Jack gets what he wants, which is, I think I'm going to choose the one that suits me, and we're going to go to the house. And I love the little part where Abigail asks Will about the tape outline. So it's like body outline Mythbusters here because in any other show there'd be a tape outline. But Will's like, no, that's only if the victim's still alive and they have to take him to the hospital.
We get to learn something.
Yeah. It's the more you know. So Abigail talks to Will about his ability to go into the minds of the killers. Mm-hmm. And she asks, what did it feel like to be him? And he gives her this great line.
It's like talking to a shadow suspended on dust.
Which I'm reasonably certain is directly from Red Dragon. Yeah, here it is. Graham filled his glass again and sat at the table by the window. He stared until the shape in the space in the opposite chair assumed a man-shaped, filled with dark and swarming motes, a presence like a shadow on suspended dust.
But it was not. It was more.
It's not a line of dialogue. Narrated. It's actually. It's a well, so that's interesting because it's a Thomas Harris description that has now been turned into dialogue. So it further enhances the. This is the Thomas Harris mixtape. Where we're pulling elements here, 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 and all with serving the greater good of the story. And it's really well done, because in an adaptation, what would you do with that beautiful piece of prose? And I'll be the first to admit that Thomas Harris does not have the most beautiful prose. His prose is often very utilitarian, but that is a really nice bit of imagery. And so to be able to shape it into that, especially in a conversation like the one there would between Will and Abigail.
Well, I like the let's pretend.
Oh,
this
yeah.
is how everything plays.
Okay, you be my dad, you be my mom, and you be the man on the phone.
And the way she
yes.
points, and they have this moment where their eyes lock, and
that
you're just
was
like,
wonderful.
She knows.
That was a wonderful setup. And
oh my
you
goodness.
Be the man
yeah.
on the phone.
Right?
When they also mention folle à deux.
Oh. Yes.
Which is a shared psychosis and also the name of a wine from the company that makes Ménage à Trois.
Oh, interesting.
Well, that is another.
Yeah, so we ought to get a bottle of that wine. But it's madness shared by two.
Oh, we need that wine.
Yes, we do.
Why did we not do this and then
because
hunt
I didn't
it
have
down?
Time. Well, it's at the grocery store. We could have gotten it. We just didn't think of it.
Twice today.
Right?
So here's where the friend shows up. And yeah, I immediately noticed the similarity.
Yeah. She looks exactly like Abigail.
And she's out talking and they're confronted by Nicholas Boyle. And Hannibal does some evidence tampering
with the
most ridiculous amount of skin on that rock that they threw at him. I mean,
really?
It barely hit him.
It
He's
did,
not bleeding.
Yeah.
He runs away. And Hannibal's like, oh, I might need that later.
Well, not just that, but what was on the rock was
this,
way
yeah, this
more.
Yeah, this scraper,
yeah.
Well, they clearly needed it to be visible to
but
the
this
audience.
This is the first time that they've
cheated?
Done something like this.
It is a
and
cheat.
It feels dirty.
It feels dirty indeed.
Right. You guys were doing so well with this evidence and this accuracy. And then he has, like, the nick the size of a paper cut on his forehead. And then,
I was wondering why they were making such a big deal out of that. The whole interaction with the girls. It's like, rather than the girls running inside where the FBI agents are, and the adults, they're yelling at this guy in the woods and trying to, throw rocks at him.
I'm wondering what they're all talking about in the house. I want to see that scene.
Why are they alone inside?
Is Hannibal saying, I don't know why she wanted me to be the man on the phone. I think Will should be the man on the phone. I'll be Will, and you be Garrett Jacob Hobbs.
So I was trying to figure out why, I don't know whether they said, oh, have some time with your friend. I have no idea why they were.
It's the weak point in the episode. And I think this whole little side jaunt here with this character is the weakest portion of a very strong episode.
He serves a single purpose.
He does,
He's a plot contrivance, is what he is, yeah.
And a very big one to the point where it's so obvious, it's a little painful.
Yeah. And this part is not the purpose I'm pointing to. The whole talking to Freddy, the whole antagonizing, get a hit in the head with a rock, it's not the purpose I think he serves. He serves to be a victim.
Yeah.
That is it.
Oh, yeah.
But that's all set up.
We'll get there.
I just would rather him have had like a 5-second conversation and then been the victim.
I think the problem is we have multiple victims in this episode that doesn't need them. Mm-hmm. So let's get there, but before we go there, we have a dream sequence.
Yes.
Where Will is about to cut Abigail's throat, and this is a great moment of conflict for Will, because he's assuming the role of dad. He's assuming the role of the killer, but mostly assuming the role of dad, and doing what dad does with her. And what I loved about the Raven Stag in this scene is it sort of rears up to bolt just as Will is woken up.
Yes.
In the pitch dark room.
Well, doesn't it do that sort of like
it crouches? Crouch? Yeah, it does a crouch like and then rear. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm loving the way we're just sprinkling this thing in. And it's, you know, David Lynch only waited till episode 2 to put batshit crazy on Twin Peaks. Hannibal is giving us little tastes of crazy.
Yeah.
Little tastes of weirdness. And it could be because they have more restraint than David Lynch, or it could be because they're actively hoping not to alienate the audience. Right. But that restraint has the same benefit of the shark in Jaws. It's giving it to us in pieces where we can think about it.
Which makes it more intense.
Where this is not a very subtle metaphor, the Raven Stag for Will here. So if they gave us too much of it, we'd either be like, oh, yeah, well, that's what it means.
Or enough with the stagger.
Or we'd be like, okay, well, that's weird. I don't want to watch this show anymore. But then we get to the cabin.
We go back to the cabin.
In the morning, where Abigail realizes that he was feeding them.
That whole breakdown for her.
Yeah.
Again, another. Not sure. Were you really crying and were you really upset?
This is another moment where Casey Rawl just really nails it here.
I think she was really freaked out.
I think, even if we go, I'm just going with the information I have so far. I would feel that she was in on it. To the degree, I don't know. You know, Nicholas Boyle suggests that dad used her as bait, which makes sense.
Makes sense.
Yes.
I would feel like she was in on it to a point where she was aware that she was involved in something bad, but sort of kept it from herself, you know, hid from it.
Suppressing the memory.
And this is it's all coming up now. The part where she's asking about will I be sick? You know, this is her processing all the information. And then he was feeding them to us. That's the end. You know, that's the conclusion of her exploration.
It really seems like she's discovering something new because she has that moment with no one in the room. So there's no benefit of an audience.
And she does do that partial gag thing.
I believe that she didn't know that. She just realized it.
Okay.
And then she goes up and we discover Marissa on the rack.
Yes.
Well, the blood from the ceiling
hits her
on the forehead.
Again, dark blood, not...
Well, yes, I noticed that right away. Yeah. Browny
accurate.
Blood, yeah.
Accurate,
and NBC safe.
Yes,
apparently. I'm more about the accuracy.
Yeah, we find that the look-alike friend
is now
impaled.
And this brings up the plot foo that puts us somehow at Nicholas Boyle killed her. And is the copycat for reasons unknown.
Because it winds up being another one of those moments in which Jack sort of being very stereotypical of the law, where he's like, oh, I got evidence. It looks like this. We're done.
Yeah.
Case closed. Put that in the file. Let's go get a drink. He's so ready to write everything off and tie it up in a bow with very obvious evidence.
Which is strange because
there's other parts where we see Jack being less that typical cop and less that typical detective and agent that just wants to kind of sweep things under the rug. Where we see him wanting to dig deeper at the truth. But in this, it did seem like he was just being very dismissive about the possibilities.
And he's like that with Abigail. It's like, I've made up my mind. It's like...
No, that's true. He's stubborn.
He's very stubborn with that. And I'm thinking, well, are you really looking at the evidence? You've just decided this is it? Because it's he's grasping at all the obvious things.
Jack is convinced because Hannibal's telling him this is what happened.
True. Hannibal's saying that the brother killed his sister and then killed this Marissa girl for hitting him in the head with a rock.
So it sets up very unconvincingly that Nicholas Boyle killed these two people for very little reason. Jack's satisfied because he's there in grumpy mode. He yells at them again. You brought Abigail back to the cabin. Now someone's dead.
But what I was wondering the whole time is because that there was, the blood and tissue on the rock, how everyone jumps to the conclusion that the tissue samples match without anybody because Hannibal hid the evidence, is that now we don't know that it could have been planted. That the tissue that they found that is in her mouth did not actually come from him directly, but from this tissue that is on the rock. And so Hannibal gets to kill and have his moment as, the copycat killer, but blames somebody else in the process.
Mm-hmm. Him just cleaning up his mess.
Yes.
That's him hopefully throwing Will off. And then we can just get over this whole Garrett Jacob Hobbs copycat thing.
And we get rid of a wild card.
Yeah.
That Freddie has
showed up just to be gotten rid of.
Because if he's out and about and still doing this, he becomes a nuisance.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do we just get rid of him and he just stops trying to attack her? Or are we going to expect him? No, we don't have to worry about it now because he's taken care of.
And here's where Jack tells them to escort Abigail Hobbs out of Minnesota.
Out of Minnesota, yes.
She's apparently lost her Minnesota privileges. Hannibal has two wonderful moments when they arrive back at the house. First is when Marissa's mother comes running up and Hannibal stops her and just sort of holds her with no expression at all, just to stop her there. Then when he sees Freddie.
Yes.
And he says, Miss Lounge, you're on the wrong side of the police line.
Yes.
That line is simple, but also loaded, because I think Hannibal would very much like to see Freddy on the other side of a police line.
And the smile he gives her definitely insinuates
I do, as irritating as I find Freddy, I think the sequences between her and Hannibal are delightful.
Only because
it's it cat makes and mouse.
Really want him to take her out.
Hannibal just keeps batting that out.
Because he's thinking it, and he's just making us wait.
He's planning a particularly fancy dinner for this one.
Yeah, so they go back without Abigail.
No, with Abigail. Abigail's back in the house while they're dealing with the bullshit
outside.
That's
when she has her...
And she finds the hair in the pillow.
Can I tell you how creepy that
was? Oh, yeah, that was a creepy moment.
Oh, God, yes. Now, that I don't think she faked that part.
That's what I was talking about, was that part.
She didn't know. She was alone. There was no one there.
She had no one.
She had no reason to fake
no audience.
Right.
And that was the part that I was like, no, that there was honest.
Like, I guess I could see her suppressing the idea, but come on, she knows the way that he treated deer.
It seemed like she didn't make that connection.
I think it's her trying really hard to believe otherwise.
Okay.
Not even suppressing it, just choosing not to acknowledge the possibility.
A survival mechanism.
Yeah.
Okay. And also, I have to read this show. It keeps leading us down different paths and things like that.
Right, it keeps tricking us.
So, and this moment, it's very easy to believe that we're wrong. Abigail is not an accomplice. Because this is all new to her. She's figuring this all out for the first time. And when she's holding that handmade pillow with this that's sewn with
the
sinew
leathers
around
the
outside.
Flipping open boxes to try to find that knife.
Yes.
Well, I love that they left, the knife evidence. I mean, really.
I know.
The evidence knife there, I don't think so.
And, what's scary about that moment is she has a weapon.
Yeah.
She tears it open and starts pulling just wads of dark hair out of this pillow. And it's shot in a way that is disturbing. Yeah. And then you realize she's got a weapon.
Just in time for Nicholas Plot Point to show up.
There's a moment, where I wonder if she's not an accomplice, and this is when she kills herself. Because there's many twists and turns. Remember, I don't know what happens in the future.
Very true, yeah.
So there's a moment there where I'm like, we're going to lose her.
So that's the...
And then we lose the connection.
That's them leading us down a different... I didn't even recognize that. I wonder if the first time we saw it, Now that you mentioned that, I may have gone down that route too.
I felt she was such a strong character that she wouldn't have done that.
Hmm.
If she was going to off herself, it would have been while she had the time in that apparently unsupervised, fancy
ye old gothic sanitarium.
Right. She had met many an hour to pontificate that and plot it, but she did not.
Right. I just didn't know if, like I said, not knowing what's going to happen in the future. I was like, is this going to be a twist? Are we now going to take a possible path to information away in order to make this a more intricate plot? They don't. What they do is they plant an idea, and they've teased me. They have me thinking about something else, and then they do something completely different. Because...
Look over here.
Yeah. Because the brother comes in.
After Hannibal had asked about him outside...
Yes.
Which is why Hannibal and Alana are sticking around outside, because Hannibal knows something's going down.
Also, Freddy hints at it. Yeah. I'm not the only one who's sneaking around looking in windows.
Did you happen? Yeah, exactly.
So we know he's there.
And someone.
Abigail slices him up here. In a very... this was the only moment of her performance where it's just like, okay, you're just playing the, oh my God, wide-eyed, I just stabbed you card that everybody plays in the, oh my God, I just stabbed you.
Yeah.
Unless you're meaning to stab. If you do that, you have that same expression on your face. So it's the only, okay, yeah, we've seen this before
and
moment for me.
Not only that, but she has the right knife for it, but they don't really show her gutting him.
Well, I looked at the body carefully this time.
I don't
think she did. She pulled up a little bit, clearly. We don't see the knife come back out.
No,
though.
True. Yeah.
So we go back upstairs,
it's just
and
hands.
Hannibal's up there with Alana, and Hannibal snapping to action.
Oh, yeah.
Is like, okay,
yes.
Game on
Let's
here.
Go.
This is where we see, okay, we're definitely to the point where Hannibal is
in predatory mode.
He smacks poor Alana up against the fireplace. And, that's super bad for you.
It can't be good.
And
head trauma.
Immediately.
Oh, she'll be fine.
Abigail,
she'll wake up. She'll wake
show
up.
Me what happened.
Right.
And he's down there. This is Hannibal's fascination with budding killers. We see this throughout the Thomas Harris lore in all the movies. He is fascinated with the possibility of killers.
This is also one of the first times you start to see him actually being the puppet master in person.
Mm-hmm.
Because before that, all we've ever seen is looks, and on the outside, things happening, little subtle reactions. This is the first time we see him take action and manipulate everything according to his design in that moment. So I thought it was very interesting to do that in episode 3.
And he also asks for permission. He says, I can help you if you ask me to.
True.
He's not going to do it. He's going to make her that accomplice, the direct accomplice. He's going to put her in that harm's way, and then we'll help.
It also absolves him, because he can say, well, she asked me to do it.
I don't know if that will hold up in court. Why'd you hide the body, Dr. Lecter? The little girl asked me to do it.
But I wonder if
she's so cute.
But I wonder if in some way it absolves him of
It's not. It's not like his premeditated.
Exactly.
Thing.
Yeah. Exactly. It makes her take action.
Sort of Hannibal's leaving himself a paper trail that he can pull back up, I think.
Yeah, that's kind of what I meant. Like, it puts it in her hands. And so he kind of can keep his hands clean in a way. Because in his mind, it's not his choice to do that. It is. She has asked him to do it.
It's interesting the way he plays the what would they believe card.
You gutted him.
You butchered him. Yeah, they've already pretty much shown us several times that the public has, you know, is convinced that she's a killer.
Yes, with the cannibals.
So it'd be real easy.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be all it would take. Especially with Marissa dying, it doesn't matter who killed Marissa. At this point,
couldn't have because she was in the presence of the FBI. Exactly.
Theoretically, I don't know. They let her just wander. Maybe she had her own room at that really generic looking hotel, which I liked. Yeah. That it was
she's
a very generic
to jump
looking
walls.
Hotel.
Yeah,
speaking of
walls,
her magic tricks, let's talk the last scene in this episode where she manages to get into Hannibal Lecter's office without him knowing. I mean,
well, he knows.
Freddie can get anywhere she wants. How the hell? I mean, okay, so Abigail breaks out of the hospital. She climbs the wall. Okay, it's an old hospital. I don't know. She goes to the solarium and climbs
out.
I don't know.
Taught by Hobbs.
Well, that's fine. I buy that. With knowing who Hannibal Lecter is and how the office is part of his house. I don't know that we've seen that yet in the
series.
No,
we haven't seen that
yet. But it is part of his house. I think his security would be a little bit better. I think he probably would not have an accidentally open window or something. Mm-hmm. And that office has those big, gorgeous curtains. So maybe she hid behind a curtain or something.
He's not exactly surprised at.
He's not.
No, he's not.
Maybe that's it. Maybe he left
something.
The door open
for him. He plays this card where he's shocked that she's.
No, he's not shocked.
He's not shocked.
No.
He
knows she's there. He calls her out, basically without looking up at her, so it's not even surprised.
Yeah.
And
she's like, how did you know?
She says, where else would she go? And this is where she actually confronts Hannibal with, you called the house.
Yes. She lays it all
and
out.
Says, you're like my dad. And Hannibal has that great line, I am
nothing
like your dad.
Your father, yeah.
And it's...
I love the, I'll keep your secret.
Yeah. That's quid pro quo. Yeah, that's Hannibal
going into
a little bit of quid pro quo there.
What I find really interesting, though, going back to color choices, is that from the time that Abigail leaves the sanitarium, wherever she's at earlier, she has the same colors as Hannibal and Jack and Alana, that deep, rich, saturated tones. When she finally is revealed in the balcony area and comes down, her colors are exactly like Will's. She has washed-out jeans on, and she's got a sort of beige-toned jacket on. And even, like, she had a scarf on earlier. In the two earlier scenes, there were two different scarves. I was like, what is it? Why is everybody wearing a neckerchief in this episode?
She got her throat slit.
But Alana does it, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think if it had just been...
Maybe Alana does it to make her less self-conscious.
Maybe. Because I noticed that everybody had, like, neckwear when they were at the cabin.
Let's talk about Hannibal's lovely layering.
Yes.
Where he was wearing his shirt and beautiful tie with a vest, I assume.
That impossibly
a zippered,
long coat.
Zippered
jacket.
Sweater, too, under that. Then his sport coat. I mean, he's either very hot or he just knows how to layer better than anybody.
It's his thing.
It is his thing.
It's his style thing.
He has poor circulation. I mean, really.
There was one
He's
point
cold-blooded
he
reptilian.
Exactly.
Such an interesting suit jacket on.
Was it the blue with the red grid?
Really, so it was a little long. It was very 60s.
The red grid blue suit shows up a lot. In fact, the Funko Hannibal pophead toy that's going to be at the San Diego Comic Con is wearing that suit.
Oh, he's wearing that.
Yeah.
Anybody wants to gain favor with
yes,
that?
Yes. We would love the Comic Con exclusive bloody Hannibal Lecter.
We will pay for it.
We just can't go.
We will send you the money. We just can't get ourselves.
Yeah. I know. It's like, now I can't even go. I'm here with you.
Now you're here in Chicago.
Oh, I can't go to San Diego. Not like I could. Comic-Con sells out like within seconds.
Oh, God.
I try to go every year. So what I want, really interested in right here, is if Abigail and Hannibal in their dialogue are now on the same level. Mm-hmm. She has completely told him, I know.
Yeah.
And they're sharing this sort of moment where they're equals and that they're now sharing this madness.
So now they can talk freely.
They can talk freely. But why up to this point did they look like each other, dress like each other? But now in this moment, in this, where they connect, she looks like Will.
I know why. Because Hannibal, when he was uncertain about her, did not have the upper hand. When Hannibal knows who she really is, he can manipulate her, period.
Just like Will.
It's the uniform of the pawn, then.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hannibal can use her.
She's gone from a viable player to a pawn. Yeah.
Because she knows something about him. She knows he called the house. Who cares?
Right.
Really, she could tell Jack Crawford that tomorrow. He called the house. It's like, yeah, I called because I thought maybe I should call and say we want to come by. And then Will was out there, and so I ran out.
Mm-hmm.
So
that was his cover.
Who would you'd believe Hannibal if he said that?
Mm-hmm.
Because he has never been to a crime scene before. Hannibal, in the first episode, was just... He was so out of his element. Of course he might accidentally tip off the guy.
Yeah.
So, really, she's got nothing on him. Really.
True.
And he's got everything on her.
Well, they hit a body together.
Yeah.
He's got a lot on her.
Yeah, but she's also a child who's clearly easily manipulated by monsters.
Yes. Well, it's just been happening all her life.
That's very true.
But yes. That kind of answers it for me because I was trying
and
to
I think,
figure that
I think
out.
That's it because I really feel Hannibal seems so in control there.
Oh, definitely.
And I think part of that is he's in his element when he snaps to, okay, we're covering this up.
And he does not feel threatened by her knowing his secret.
Not
because
she really doesn't know.
I just wonder if anyone is eating Nicholas Boyle. Did he hide the body? Or did he take care of the body?
Well, let's see how episode 4 opens up.
That's a good point. Especially if she's thinking if you use every bit of it, you honor and it's not murder.
Yeah, and it's not murder. That's a big one. Okay, you can you can email us at eattherootcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at eattherootcast. And we will be back next week with an episode entitled Whiff. 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 And this episode was pulled from the schedule. This was never aired on NBC.
It was never aired?
Okay, so we'll be back next week. Thanks for joining us at the table.